Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Turn up your volume. Your volume.
Because you're about to listen to
The Sick Podcast.
The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the spot!
Sports entertainement like no other.
Rejoins, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est bon, et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Good Friday evening, everyone. I am Matt O'Han. I am back from a two-week hiatus. Let's get down to business before we get into everything of where I was. We get into the Canadians and all the good stuff. Okay. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Energy Transportation Group is a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America, driven to be different. We're also brought to you by La Bitte TB Beer, brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards. La Bitte TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bitte TB, embrace your true nature. Light up your Monday nights at Playground with their electrifying musical Monday karaoke nights. Step into the spotlight or cheer on your friends as you dive into a world of music, laughter, and unforgettable moments. Every Monday starting 9 p.m. and make your night even sweeter. Enjoy their $5 drink specials as of 7 p.m. That is a great deal. Like, forget the price of everything these days. Like $5 for a drink, you're lucky you get $5 for a Diet Coke anywhere. So we're also brought to you by Playground. Also, finally, sportsbuffshop.com. Shop all your licensed lifestyle apparel, including hoodies, caps, and tees of your favorite teams from all major leagues at sportsbuffshop.com. Use code SICK10 for 10% off all their items. Okay, where was I? I was in Boston one weekend, and then I was in New York another one. That's the short version because I know you all don't really care where I was. So that's my story. I'm back. Good to be back. I've missed you guys, missed the Sick Army, and I missed this guy. He's my usual Friday guest. He's from the Montreal Gazette. His name is Stu Cowan. Stu, how are you?
I'm doing well. Boston, New York, that's pretty good back-to-back.
Yeah, and the thing was that what I did that was stupid was I came home in between, and those were two separate road trips. So I put some kilometers on the car there, but it was good. It was fun.
Nice. Two of my favorite cities.
Yeah, I went to. You know what's actually, this is one thing again. Let's not get too into it, but this is one thing. It was like the first time I've ever gone to this. I went to see a musical. I've never seen a Broadway show. I saw a Broadway show for the first time.
Nice.
Would recommend.
Nice.
I saw Hadestown. It's a one. My girlfriend's like a Broadway nut, so she was like, "Oh, we have to see this one. This one won all the awards." So I was like, "Okay, cool, no problem." Cool. So yeah, that was my last 2 weeks. The Canadians, eventful last 2 weeks. The trade deadline passed. I think everything went just about as expected for them. But more recently. As recently as last night, just, you know, it's another time that the goalies, they're starting to frustrate fans, but it's a good type of frustration because fans want the team to start losing some games and dropping points, but the goalies in Samuel Montembeau and Caden Primo, they're saying, no, we're not dropping points. We're going to keep picking them up.
I don't understand fans who don't want the goalies to play well because I think it's really important that both of these goalies do play well these last 16 games or whatever it is that's left, because they're setting up for next season, right? This is going to be your goaltending tandem. And you know, that three-goalie, three-headed monster that lasted so long, now that it's finally over, it gives them a chance to see if Caden Primo can indeed be the backup for Sam Montembeau. And the way he played against Columbus, you wonder if you can even challenge him to be the number one goalie. It's only one game, but they're in a much better situation now, the goaltending situation, than they were with Jake Allen. And if Jake Allen hadn't waived his no trade clause to New Jersey, they might still be in that three goalie situation. So it was also really nice to see Jake Allen last night. He let in two goals in the first three shots he faced in his Devils debut, but then he ended up with 35 or 36 saves and they won the game. So you know, I always like seeing good things happen to good people, and Jake Allen's one of the best people I've ever met in the world of hockey, so I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, and it's funny because I remember seeing last night, I turned in a little early last night, but I remember seeing some tweets like, oh man, already, how did Kent Hughes, he did it again, how did he do it?
Allen let in the first shot. He let in the first shot and the third shot, and then he settled down.
And everyone was like, "Oh man, I don't know if he's going to make it to 40 games in New Jersey." The game's 60 minutes. Let's calm down, people. He had a very fine performance.
Well, you got to imagine the pressure that was on him after two goals on the first. Oh man, shot, everything he went through here, like it must have been like. And it, you know, I'm sure I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure his family's probably still in Montreal, or maybe they've gone back to their off-season home. Excuse me. I don't imagine they've joined him in New Jersey. So it's a tough time. You know, after trades, it's a tough time away from family and everything else like that. And so I was, again, really happy to see what he was able to do. Excuse me, last night.
Yeah, and last night, another, just again, like he didn't face a ton of shots, Samuel Montembeau. But, you know, the Canadians as a unit gave the Bruins really all they could handle. Whether the Bruins – you know, completely showed up. That's, you know, for that's another debate to have. But the fact is the Canadians pushed them to the brink, and Bruins are a great hockey team. And Samuel Montembeau made some pretty big saves in that game. So good on them. The flip side to that is another game where the Canadians only score one goal. You know, that's what a lot of people are talking about. That's making the rounds on Twitter, and what people are talking about in the radio, on TV, and what it got me thinking of is a game like that, something to build on, or is a better building block like that game against New York where they lost, I think, 7-4, and you know, it was a mess. It was a mess defensively, but they got the offense that they needed, and you could clean up defense. I find it's a lot harder to clean up offense than it is to clean up defense.
I think last night's game was a good barometer for the Canadians, because the thing that's I'm working on a Stu Slapshot's notebook that'll be hockey and set up tomorrow morning, but and talking about, you know, the compete level has been the most impressive thing about this team all season, and the least impressive thing is the lack of goals from the forwards. You know, their defensemen have scored 41 goals. The only team in the NHL with more goals from their defense is Colorado with 54. So the defense is providing offense, but the forwards just aren't scoring. And it's last night highlighted that. I mean, the compete level, Boston's a much better team, much, you know, more talent. But the Canadians gave them a fight the whole way, but they just couldn't score on their opportunities. They just don't have enough guys who can put the puck in the net. I mean, Suzuki, and it's the only regular goal scorer. Caulfield's gone 12 games now without a goal. You know, Josh Anderson has one goal in like the last 21 games, I think it is. They can't score. I mean, so the compete level, the fact that they're still competing as hard as they are when the playoffs are long out of reach, and as you said, you know, some fans would love to see them tank and not win. But speaking with Jordan Harris about that yesterday morning, he said, we hate losing in this locker room. They hate losing. He says, there's nothing worse than losing. He said, it sucks. And that's the mentality that's still in this locker room. That says a lot about Marty St. Louis and his coaching staff, that they've still kept these guys committed and the compete level is there. But they just don't – they don't have enough guys who can score, and guys who should score aren't scoring. You know, Rafael Harvey-Pinard is not necessarily a goal scorer, but he has one goal this season after what he did last year. You know, Brendan Gallagher is coming around a little bit. On a bright note, Joel Armia is playing the best hockey he's played since the playoff run when he got that big contract. But that's the biggest thing challenge for Kent Hughes moving forward. He's got to get more offensively skilled players, forwards who can put the puck in the net. And I think that's why so many fans are upset that he drafted David Reinbacher, number 5 overall, last season, because they are so loaded on defense and they don't have enough forwards who can score.
You know, that's all that is true. The thing about, well, one thing, just as a side note, it's a shame Joel Armia started having, you know, the best run of his, Canadian's career outside of the playoffs after the trade deadline. But that's another story.
Well, also after they sent them to Laval, which maybe they should have done last season or the season before.
Right.
It would be the best thing that's happened to him in his career.
But there's so much, like, had the Canadians taken a Ryan Leonard, a Zach Benson, a whoever, Michkov even, like, that guy's only helping the Canadians in 3 years, 2 years, maybe, if you're really lucky, 1 year. They need an injection of offense now, because it's one thing, you know, okay, it's fine, the expectations are low, and you know, they're not expected to win, and the games don't really count. It's about development still. They're going to start to count next year, and they need to put the puck in the net now. That still is a very important part of the game, and I'm sure, you know, wins or losses, you know, no matter what Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon may think about them, like you said, the players and Martin St. Louis and the rest of the coaching staff, they think it's pretty important. So they need that injection of life and offense into their lineup somehow. And you're right. It's a massive challenge for Kent Hughes, given the contract situations.
Yeah. And that's why I expect he's going to be very busy this off season, and especially at the draft. I expect he'll use one of those first round picks like he did, package it and make a trade like he did to get Alex Newhook, like he did to get Kirby Dach, and bring in another type of player like that. And you wonder if it might still be too early in this rebuild, but does he want to throw in 2 first-round picks and a young prospect or two and try and get a player who's already elite in the NHL from a team who's maybe having some salary cap issues or whatnot? But it's going to be difficult. And the one thing with Kent Hughes, he's shown how patient he is. Brendan Gallagher is going to give you everything he's got every game, and it's terrible. We learned the news that came out this week about his mother battling brain cancer, and that's obviously, you know, Brendan Gallagher will never use anything as an excuse. And he won't use this, but that has to have an impact on him, both on and off the ice. And Josh Anderson just looks lost right now. He looks like he's a guy who can't comprehend the concepts that Marty St. Louis wants his team to play with. You know, he's just an up and down winger. He looks lost right now. And you wonder if he can, you know, 3 years left on that contract and he can't bounce back. At least with Gallagher, you know, you're going to get the 100% effort every time he's on the ice. He's going to be a very highly paid third or fourth line winger moving forward.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Um, But they gotta he's gotta do something, and it's just more a question of how quickly does he just want to add like another Kirby Doc, Alex Newhook type at the draft this year, a 22-23-year-old guy, maybe a former first round pick who hasn't worked out well with the team he's with now and needs a change of scenery and maybe a little boost from Marty St. Louis as coach, or is he ready to go and do something bigger? And include maybe both first round picks, and again try and get a more proven goal score at the NHL level. But you know, you look at the Bruins, you look down their stats, and you know, you had 9 forwards and double figures in goals, you know, led by Pasternak, obviously. They just got so much talent. And Jim Montgomery said after the game last night, the Bruins didn't really have their legs. They weren't great last night. They came out fast against the Canes. It looked like they might blow them out of the water, but Bruins have enough talent that even on an off night, they can win. The Canadians need to work their butts off and do everything right to win a game. Like, they're not going to win a game if they don't have their legs, right? It's just not going to happen. They just don't have the skill. They don't have the talent to put the puck. They don't have enough guys who can put the puck in the net on a consistent basis.
Now, you know, I don't know. You know, I'm just – I took a quick look, and I don't see a name, but maybe this is an option for the Canadians this offseason is, you know – maybe Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon look at this roster and they say, and you know, Kent Hughes says to Jeff Gordon, listen, give me one more year where it's going to be tough. And the next off season, we're going to start making moves, because right now the contract situation is just so bad. I really can't do anything. I've exhausted all options, where they go after maybe via trade, maybe free agency. That's what I was looking at quickly. They go after a Sean Monahan type, but with, you know, maybe a little bit older, a little bit more offensive ability, or has shown that he has that offensive ability in the past. That, again, just a guy that, you know, you could ship off if need be at the deadline, you know, for, if you need a third round pick, it's another asset. You know, Kent Hughes will never say no to that. Just one of those guys, because it's really like, if people take a look at that contract situation, it's really bad, and it's really rearing its ugly head right now. Like we said, it's Brendan Gallagher, the effort level will never be questioned. And, you know, I hope for him, just on a personal side, I really hope that hockey is an escape for him.
Yeah.
You know, that would be, you know, if he said that, I feel like that would be, you know, a lot of people would be really happy for him to hear that. But like with Josh Anderson, can't do anything now. It's crazy. At the beginning of the season, at least he was getting chances. People were cheering for him because, you know, it felt bad for him. It's like Maxim Lapierre said the other night on the podcast. Now he's not doing anything.
He's not finishing his checks either. I can't remember last time he had a breakaway, and he used to have a breakaway every game. He'd miss most of them, but he had the breakaways. Again, it looks, you know, he had that little injury. He was out for a little while. He hasn't since then. He's come back in his 21 games. He has one goal. Is he still playing through some kind of an injury? We don't know, but he looks lost out there. He really does. He does not. And, you know, I was defending him last season, saying why the Canes shouldn't trade him. And I was obviously wrong, because now, you know, at the trade deadline, his name was never even mentioned. Like, there's no interest in him whatsoever with that contract and with the way he's playing. So that's another, can they get him going? And again, with the style of hockey that Marty St. Louis wants to play, you know, can he do that? I mean, they're going to have another salary retention spot open up next year, but even if you were to eat half of his contract, that's still a lot of money for a guy who's really not performing. So I think, you know, I think mentally his slump at the beginning of the season probably got to him. But, you know, at the end of this season, you know, Josh Anderson has to sit down and have a long conversation with himself and with Canadiens management, because he's got to be better. Like, he just has to be better than he is right now with the money he's making, with the situation this team is in. Like, they need him to score goals. I mentioned, you know, when he came back after he got that first goal, and I thought, like I told you on the podcast, I'm convinced he'll score 20 goals by the end of the season, just because that's the kind of player he is. He'll get hot. And
it looked like at one point that
he never got hot. And now it's like getting worse. And he looks worse now than he did at the beginning of the season when he went 20 games or whatever it was without scoring.
So, you know, is it now, like you mentioned, that slump, it may have gotten to him. Was it a confidence issue? Who knows? Is it a confidence issue? Who knows? Is it an injury? Who knows? Let's move back onto the positive, because I found this just super interesting. And I don't know if Tony touched on it, but I found it fascinating. Was just the swings in Caden Primo's psyche. Because remember, there was a game. Was it against Florida? He let in 5 goals, the same glove side. And just, you know, he looked defeated after. Like, how do you come back from that? And then fast forward to a couple nights ago, he gets a shutout against Columbus in a game that single-handedly he stole for the Canadians. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was one of the worst performances by the Canadians of the year. Mm-hmm. And he says in the he said something along the lines of like, I've arrived, I'm just here. Getting
started, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just getting started. Like that, just the confidence swing. You know, for a young goaltender like that. Listen, he declared that he's just getting started. I was quite bullish on him at the beginning of the season. I still am. Am I crazy, or is it time to accept the fact that, no, he could play in the NHL?
Well, I wrote a column earlier this week, and Monday, when the Canes practiced in Brossard, we went into the locker room after the practice, and Primo, for the first time, was in Jake Allen's old locker spot, you know, right across from Sam Montembeau, who was sitting where Carey Price used to sit. And I was looking at – I think he was talking with Eric Engels. He was doing an interview with somebody. And I was looking at him, and I was thinking to myself, I said to one of the reporters, is it just me, or does he look different? Like, he looked – Caden Primo, he just looked happy. Like, he looked happier. He just looked like a weight had been lifted off his shoulder. He had, like, a little bit of a bounce to his step when he came into the locker room. He looked like a different guy. And I'm thinking back to that guy who looked like the deer in the headlights, right? Last season, the season before, when he was really struggling with games. He had bad body language when he gets scored on. And just that thing in the locker room, he looked like a different guy. And that was Monday morning. And then Tuesday night, he goes out and he makes 41 saves and he gets a shutout. And then he has that comment after the game. And confidence is so important in any pro athlete, but especially a goalie. And it looks like he's got his confidence back. It looks like he's got a little bit of a mojo back, which you have to have to be a goalie. And as I said, just in the practice that Monday morning, he looked different, and then he really looked different on the ice. And he had spoken to me. I spoke to him on Monday also, and he was saying that, you know, the time off, his mental game really improved. He said when he was really, you know, in university, when he was the best goalie in NCAA, he said he was reading the play and thinking the game were his really his strong points, and that had maybe faltered a little bit. He was letting it get into his head. He's worked with a mental performance coach. I'm sure that's helped. It's helped with Joel Armia also. And he looks like a much more confident young goalie than he did previously, when every time he get called up and the Canes from Laval, and he'd let in bad goals, or that game against Florida, he looked like a deer in the headlights. He looked like a defeated goalie. And boy, what a way to get a confidence boost by making 41 saves. Even though it was against Columbus, it's still 41 saves, and he won that game for them.
You know what's awesome is I looked, because it just – you know, it feels like this guy has just been around forever. You know, mm-hmm. We've always heard Caden Primo's name. Yeah. He's only 24 years old. I think back to, it's not that long ago, but I think back to when I was 24. I had the same issues, like confidence wise, you know, at work, I was at the radio station. I'm trying to find my place. You know, layoffs happen. You're looking over your shoulder. He just needs, you know, he needs that reassurance right now that, you know, just like the forwards and the defensemen were getting of, it's okay to make a mistake. You know, just, you can't make it twice. Well, a goalie, you're going to make multiple mistakes a game, because you're going to let in multiple goals a game for the most part.
Yeah. And in your job, you don't have a red light going off behind you every time you make a mistake, or 20,000 right. people booing you either. Yeah.
That's right. So, you know, so it's for him, you know, he makes a mistake. He's like, now I have to wait another 10 days, 12 days to make this right. And if I don't have a good performance, it's going to be why can't I perform? I had a whole 2 weeks off almost, and most people would kill to have 2 weeks mm-hmm. off at their job. And it just goes on and on and on. So we'll see how he handles himself the rest of the season and how he performs the rest of the season, because that to me is very intriguing. Now that, you know, the pressure of the three-headed monster, because, you know, internal mm-hmm. competition is good when it's a 1A, 1B situation. It could get a little scary for a guy, especially when you feel like you're on the outside on a 1A, 1B, 1C situation. So I'm interested to see in his performances the rest of the way of the season.
Yeah, and Marty St. Louis had a good comment this week, and I agree with him. He says he thinks the three-goalie system was hardest on Jake Allen than the other two, and I agree. As a veteran guy, he's already proven himself in the NHL. Like, it's harder for him, I think, to go that long between starts as opposed to like a young guy like Primo breaking in, or a guy like Montour was placed on waivers before. They're used to sort of like wondering what their future might be. But not only knowing when you're going to get your next start, knowing you're going to be dressed for every game. Like with three goalies, there was games where one guy was watching the game in the press box, or there was games that Primo flew. If it was a back-to-back, they'd fly Primo back to Montreal or to the next city so he'd get a good night's sleep. Like, you're not even around your team. You're not in the locker room. You're not on the bench. You're watching from the press box. That's it. So now, even when he's not playing, he knows he's going to be dressed. He's always going to be on the bench. He knows he might get called in if Montembeau struggles. And, Primo spoke to me also, he says he's had a friendly competition with Montembeau all season. He says that's going to continue. And as he said, every goalie wants to play. So his challenge now is he's officially been anointed the backup now. And now for him, his challenge is to put heat on Sam Montembeau. And that's a good thing to show that maybe I can be the number one goalie moving forward too. And from the Canadian standpoint, a salary cap standpoint, they're paying less than $4 million for both goalies next year. You know, after having that $10.5 million cap hit for Carey Price for so long. So it opens up opportunities to spend money elsewhere, like on a forward who can score goals.
Yeah, no, it does. And, you know, again, just another thing is, you know, how forget that, you know, the Canadians were looking for an heir apparent to the crease after Carey Price. Forget about that. But even when Carey Price was here, and to an extent, Jake Allen kind of came in. He came in the COVID season, or the season
before. He came in basically Carey Price's backup, right? When they realized Carey Price couldn't play 65 games a season anymore with his knee situation, and they realized they needed a legitimate backup, and. And that's why they got it. It was actually September of 2020 when they got Allen.
Yeah, it was the COVID season where they
into the COVID season.
And up until that season, how long were the Canadians looking for a good backup for Carey Price? Like I think the last one before Jake Allen. Quality backup, correct me if I'm wrong, and no disrespect to the other guys that backed up Carey Price, I think it was Peter Budaj. They didn't have anyone. They didn't have us, and it was just, give me a guy, just give me 10 wins. Like I remember that with Antti Niemi when he was here. It was if he was able to give us 10 mm-hmm. wins instead of six over the however many games he played, Canadians would have been in the playoffs.
I still remember Claude Julien getting upset at me in a post-game news conference because he had played Price like 13 games in a row or something. Mm. And Price had a bit of a rough night. And I asked him, if you thought about maybe giving Carey Price a night off, and he got mad, fed up of this. He got really – he blew up at me. And then Claude, being the gentleman he is, like the next day or a couple days later, he apologized to me. So I wasn't upset with you. I was really pissed off at my team. But he had nobody else he could put in. He was putting another guy in net meant we were going to lose, basically. So a tired Carey Price was a better option than whoever else he had as a chance to put in. That's why Mark Bergevin recently realized we can't play Carey Price 60-odd games a year. We need somebody who's going to be able to play 30 games a year, 35 games a year maybe. And then if we're going to get in the playoffs, we get a rest of Carey Price.
But that's it. And now, seemingly, if this works out – the way I think the Canadians hope I think the way that they're thinking it, if Caden Primo works out the way they want him to, it's no knock to say you're a backup goalie anymore.
No.
It's not like the days where it's just like, you know, you put the backup in against the weaker team and that's away you go. If you win, great. And if you don't, oh well. And if you do win, or if you don't win, oh well, we'll get them next time, you know, and kind of threw that game away. That doesn't happen anymore. Teams don't have the luxury to throw away 30, 35 games now.
No, I think if things work out, excuse me, the Canadians hope they work out with Primo's development, we're going to see a case where Montembeau plays 50, 52 games and Primo plays 30 games, like plays a game a week or moving forward, and then create a little bit of a competition over who gets the net more. But as I said, from Montembeau, you're talking about the thing that Montembeau's done this season, he's proven he can give his team a chance to win just about every game he plays. There's maybe not even a handful of games this year where Montembeau has been shelled and hasn't given his team a chance to win. And against the Bruins, again, he gave his team a chance to win. He played really well, got them into overtime. And, you know, you're not going to win too many games as a goalie when your team only scores one goal for you.
And, you know, that goal that Jake DeBrus scored, I mean, it's 3-on-3 anyways, so you can't really do much. Yeah. As a goalie, once your team's caught out of position anyways, but he couldn't do
2-on-1.
You can't blame him on that goal. That was a beauty by Jake DeBrus, who it seems like it's amazing to me that he went from requesting a trade to just he stays in Boston. That's another crazy story. But just looking at it, was Antti Niemi. It was actually his last season in the NHL. He was awful. 17 games, a 3.78 goals against average, 887 save percentage. He had 8 wins, 6 losses, 2 overtime losses, and he was pulled in one. That was the year that they missed the playoffs by 1 point or 2 points. Just give me one more win, man. Just give me one more win. That's all it was.
That Mike Condon there for a while, I remember too. I remember he played in that.
He took over after Carey Price's knee.
Yeah.
Karski, good playoff. He was fine against the Rangers in the playoff run. You can't blame him for that playoff loss, but it wasn't like playing in front of Carey Price.
No. And Marc Bergevin's built this team around, let's get into the playoffs. Anything can happen, and maybe Carey Price can stand on his head. And he did that, in 2021 when he did, basically carry. Well, he did. I mean, there's no way to get out of the first round against the Leafs without Carey Price. He carried them to the final, and then, unfortunately for him, that was the beginning of the end.
So all that to say, if it works out, Primo can have himself a very nice long job and a nice long tenure here in Montreal if he so chooses to want to stay here.
Well, at least until Jacob Fowler is ready to.
Yes, and then there's even more
competition. Then you're going to have a 3-goalie competition again.
But you know what? If they all work out, even better for the Canadians.
And the waivers they have worked with Fowler, when Fowler turns pro, you can't send him to Laval without losing him. Primo would have played in Laval this season, but it wasn't for waivers. That's the only reason why he was with the Canadians, is because Kent Hughes knew he would lose them if he sent them on waivers to Laval. So that's how this three-goalie situation ended up.
And you know what? If you're Kent Hughes, you better hope, if they all three of them work out, that you better make the right decision.
Yeah,
but that's a good problem to have. Let's talk. We've gone 30 minutes, 31 minutes without even mentioning his name, I think. Juraj Slafkovský, still trucking along, playing some, again, very good hockey. Had another good game last night. Very good pass to Nick Suzuki last night for his 26th goal of the year. However, there was one point in the game that I think collectively everyone in Montreal that has a Twitter or X account tweeted or X'd the same thing at the same time, which was shoot the damn puck.
Yeah,
you got to shoot in that spot. And listen, he's matured quite nicely over the season to now. That's another one of his areas. He just shoot the puck, man. You got a good shot.
Yeah, Marty Saint Louis had a good quote after the game last night talking about it's like he's got a lot of poker chips now. He's collected all these poker chips now, and he knows he can play some, and if you lose one, well, you lose it, you know. And then it was a pretty good way to analyze it. And, you know, I've noticed his confidence, like, really carrying the puck through the neutral zone. He's not afraid to make moves. He's not afraid to stick handle. Sometimes it doesn't work. There's times he coughs it up at the offensive blue line, mm-hmm. which is obviously not a good thing to do, but he's not afraid to try it. He's not afraid to do it. He does need to shoot the puck more. His passing is, like, the setup to Suzuki was fantastic. His vision, he's really blending in well with those guys. He still has some problems in his own end. I mean, that first Boston goal, he got caught puck watching a bit instead of taking his man in front of the net. But that happens to all kinds of players, right? He's the confidence level, the path he can, when he makes a pass, he fires it, and he's playing with two guys who can take those passes, right? And make something happen with them. So, you know, with Cole Caulfield, and as Marty St. Louis said after the game, he's going to start scoring again. Like, his shooting percentage is 7.5%. It was like 16, above 16 last year. He's eighth in the NHL, I think, in shots. And the last couple of games, especially against Columbus, he had two great scoring chances, and he was just unlucky. One of them hit the goalie off the shoulder. I don't think the goalie even saw it. Another one sort of pad save that he sort of got lucky on. So the goals are going to come, but, like, those three guys together, it's going to be a bright future with those three guys as line mates moving forward. They see the game. They think the game very well. They obviously have all the skill. But you're right. The number one thing with Slafkovský now is just the work in the defensive end is going to come. He's way ahead of where you'd think a 19-year-old in the NHL would be playing defensively. He's lost some issues to iron out, but he's got to shoot the puck more. Like, when he gets a chance, he's got to shoot.
Just take, you know what? And it's funny because Cole Caulfield, while, you know, he's on the Canadiens' top line, that top line is solidified. That will be a line unless something crazy happens for what seems to be like a long time. You should take a page out of Cole Caulfield's book and just keep on shooting. Shoot or shoot. Yeah. Just keep on shooting. Because Cole Caulfield, the Canadiens have played six games in the month of March. Cole Caulfield has zero goals, but he still has 26 shots.
He's in the top 10 in the NHL in shots.
Just above four a game. Just shoot the puck more. That's all it is.
Marty had a good quote last night too, and he's talking about Caulfield, and he's saying, if you reverse his stats, he's a goal scorer, he's going to score again, don't worry. But if you reverse his stats, nobody would be complaining. And if you reverse his stats, he'd have 33 goals and 19 assists instead of 19 goals and 33 assists. And before the season, now who would have thought that, you know, Nick Suzuki was going to score 30 goals, which it certainly looks like he will. He's at 26 now. Who would have thought that Cole Caulfield would have 33 assists at this point? He's only three behind Suzuki. So, as Marty said, he's seeing the game better. He's visualizing the game better, Caulfield. He's become a better playmaker. He's always been a really good stick handler, good passer, good vision. But they're paying him all that money to score goals, right? They're not paying him that money to get assists, rack up assists. So, it's sort of hard to figure out, like, just why it's not going in for him. Because he's shooting. He's got the great shot. He's getting lots of chances. And you figure at some point it has to change. Like, they go from a 16.5% shooting percentage last season to 7.5% this season. It's hard to figure out how that happens.
You know what I'll say, though, is one thing that is a huge positive for Cole Caulfield. And listen, I know the pessimistic Habs fans that are fed up with the losing, and I get it. I get being fed up with losing. But this might really piss some people off what I'm about to say and rub people the wrong way, but a really big positive for Cole Caulfield is that he's played every game this season.
Yes.
I remember that was a big question. You know, we were talking about before his extension. We said, can he play a full season? He's doing it right now. So it's not going perfectly and it's not going in for him, but like you said, he's becoming a better playmaker. You know, that's another thing he could add to his toolkit once, you know, if he is still dealing with the after effects of the shoulder, that's going to be in his toolkit when he's not dealing with those effects anymore. Yeah. So he's playing a full season, and I think that's very important for the development of Cole Caulfield.
And he is coming back from pretty major surgery, shoulder surgery. I mean, when you're a shooter and a goal scorer, and I've never had shoulder surgery, but I'm sure it feels a little different.
I could tell you this. A buddy of mine, he played never to the level of NHL, but he played very high level hockey his entire life. He told me, he goes, I have the Cole Caulfield injury. He got the surgery. He's not an elite athlete getting, physiotherapy every single day. He had to take a year. He's still in his year off of beer league. Done. Can't play. And next year he goes back to the surgeon, does some tests, range of motion, whatever, with physio as well. And then they'll determine if he could play or not.
Yeah.
So it was a pretty big, a massive surgery he had.
Yeah, and with pro athletes, a little different because your buddy wouldn't have the daily.
Around
him and all the work. That's why pro athletes heal quicker than normal people, because they have better doctors and massage therapists and everything else working with them on a daily basis. But am I concerned about Cole Caulfield not scoring? Yeah. Am I overly concerned? No, because you figure eventually they got to start.
Law of averages.
He'll get a game, he's going to get a couple of goals and maybe feed off of that. And if he was going to have sort of an off-season goal scoring, this isn't really a bad one to have when they're still better now than maybe 2 years down the road when you talk about sophomore jinx in sports. Well, last season was a short season for him. This is only his second full season. So there's a lot of things, I guess, that might factor into it. But he's still getting lots of shots. He's still getting looks. He's still getting chances. And you figure eventually they got to start going in. And as you said, he hasn't missed a game.
Well, and that it's huge. It's huge that he hasn't missed a game, because that's it. It goes in the best. They say this. They said this in football when determining the free agents, because it's free agency now. The best ability is availability. It goes for hockey. Goes for basketball. Goes for baseball. Goes for football. Goes for any sport. Best ability is availability.
And not just because of his shoulders or his size, right? He's a small kid, and he's able to avoid the big hits, right? He's got eyes in the back of his head at times. He knows how to spin away. He knows how to protect himself. He's been doing that since he was the smallest kid on the ice at 8 years old or 7 years old or whatever. So he's used to protecting himself. But to do it at the NHL level is another thing, and he's been able to do that this season. And he hasn't missed many, if any, practices or that with therapy. And I know Slavkovsky's missed most of the practices recently, morning skates for therapy, and Suzuki from time to time will take a day, but Caulfield seems to be healthy. Maybe the shoulder feels a little different, as we were mentioning. Maybe the shot feels a little different coming off his stick. But he's not going to, heading into the season when people are saying, 50 goals, 40 goals. He's on pace, I think, to finish with 24 or 25, which for a normal player wouldn't be disappointing. But as I said, Cole Caulfield, the Canes are paying him a lot of money to score goals, and it's just not happening this season.
And again, it's just like you said, like Marte St. Louis said, flip the stats and nobody's batting an eye. If he was on pace to have 41 goals and 24 assists, nobody would be mad about that. So I'm concerned for the moment, because the Canadians need Cole Caulfield to be Cole Caulfield. But like you said, overly concerned for long term, not really. He's going to have a full off season, if it does feel different, to get used to it. So that'll be good for him.
And the thing with Caulfield, the other thing, the best availability being, it's also like he's a breath of fresh air when he walks into the room. Like he hasn't let it, whether he's scoring or not scoring, he's still got that upbeat personality. He keeps the room. The guys love him. He's like their little brother running around there. He's smiling and laughing. We interview with the media. He's got a really good, fun personality. And I think especially playing in this market, that's really important. ESPN did a little feature on him. I saw it on Twitter earlier today, and he was talking about, the pressure of playing here and how difficult it was and the expectations of fans. But he had an interview party saying, when that season when he got sent to Laval, his second year here, he said he was actually started going to the outdoor rinks in Montreal just to skate, just to make the game fun again and realize why he had the passion for the game. And it's easy to forget how young these kids are, 22, 23, 24 years old, with the pressure in this market. And even more so for Slavkovsky. That's, what's impressed me the most about Slavkovsky this season is his ability to deal with everything that comes with playing in Montreal at such a young age. And to improve the way he has, to be so good dealing with us in the media, to keeping his sense of humor, keeping his smile. He's hard on himself, but he enjoys coming to the rink. He's having fun, which is really important for a kid, especially at that age. And the same with Cole Caulfield. There's a lot of young guys on this team, and they all seem to be able to handle what comes with playing in Montreal. And not all athletes, not all players who have been here can do that. And, you know, Jonathan Drouin was sort of the poster boy for that.
You know, maybe this is a link. Maybe I'm creating a link. Either way, you know, this is what the vision, I guess, that Kent Hughes and Jeff Gorton had. We've said it all along. They're building this team of guys that are around the same age together. They're like brothers. Nobody's taking too much air out of the room or taking up too much space. And maybe they just realized that, you know, hey, it's not going well for me. It's going well for him. We're all in the same boat. I mean, we're all, you know, we're all going towards the same goal at least. So maybe that helps. Maybe I just am too much of an optimist.
No, and one of the reasons they drafted Slavkovsky and they said that is because they thought he would be able to handle the spotlight in Montreal. I mean, he was living by himself when he was 14 years old, left home at 14 to play hockey.
That's crazy.
I have a son. I can't imagine him leaving home at 14 years old. I can't imagine letting him leave home at 14 years old. But he's a very mature 19-year-old kid. He's going to turn 20 in not too long. And that's one of the reasons why the Canadians drafted him, because they figured he could handle everything that comes with playing here. And he has been able to handle it. It's been really, really impressive. That's been even more impressive to me than how he's been able to improve on the ice.
Mm. Now, I know you're not in the business of predictions. To my knowledge, you're not much of a betting man. Canadians got a 5-game road trip. It's generally a tough one for them, and especially because Vancouver is not a cakewalk anymore. Mm-hmm. They're quite the opposite. Give me over under 5.5 points.
I was going to say under. I was going to say before you said that, I was going to say I figured they'd come back with 4 points, maybe 2 wins or 1 win and 2 overtime losses. They played so many. They played 38 one-goal games this season, which is goes back. They're 16-11-11 in those games. It goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, if Cole Caulfield was scoring more or if they had more offense from Josh Anderson, guys like that, instead of 16-11-11, maybe they're – you know, 20, maybe they have 20 wins instead of only 16 or 18, just by a couple more goals from those guys. So I'm going to say on this road, I'd say they come back with, I'd say 4 points out of 10.
I think the tank crowd would be okay with that. I think they'll be okay with that. You know,
the tank crowd forgets. And I wrote this. Forget the Blackhawks didn't have the worst team. They weren't the worst team in the NHL last season. They were the third worst, and they won the lottery. There's a draft lottery. You're not. You know, you're not. The Canadians aren't going up very far in the standings from where they are, and they're going to where they are now is right around where they're going to be right at the end of the season.
Yeah.
You know, they're not. But as we mentioned, with the lack of scoring, they're not going to win. It's not like they're going to go on a roll and win. You know, it's 16 games left. They're not going to win 10 of their last 16 games or something like that. It's just not going to happen. They're just not good enough to do it. But you want them to be – one-goal losses actually at this point are almost perfect, right? Because they're in the game. They're in the game. They're battling. They think they can win, and then we lost by a goal. Okay, and you stay where you are in the draft, or you improve your draft ranking.
So that's the thing is, you know, it's good perspective that you give because – I'm looking at it now on tankathon.com. I'm sure many Canadians fans have been well acquainted with this website over the past few years.
Yeah.
They could fall probably or climb the way, depending on the way you look at it, as high or as low as fifth worst. Yeah. They ain't catching Columbus.
No.
Columbus is at 55 points. I know it's only 6 points, but Columbus isn't winning 3 more games than the Canadians are this season. We're picking up 7 more points than the Canadians will pick up from now till the end of the year. That ain't going to happen.
No.
So the lowest they could go is beat out Arizona for fifth. Good perspective. I don't see them.
They're going to finish 26, 27 or 28. That's more or less where they're going to be, right? Pittsburgh 6 points ahead of them right now. I don't see them catching Pittsburgh, and Arizona's 2 points behind them. You know, it's Arizona. Then it's amazing. Ottawa's 3 points behind the Canadians. It's that's
well, they,
I mean, you talk about Canadians fans being frustrated. Imagine Ottawa fans. Eh? They're 3 points behind the Canadians. You would think Ottawa would catch them, but I mean, Ottawa's just it's what a horror show that is in Ottawa this season.
Listen, I'll say this. There are three really important games for the Canadians between now and the end of the season, and they are the last three games of the season because they play Ottawa and then they play back-to-back against Detroit.
Yeah.
Now, Detroit aren't in this race. However, it's back-to-back games against Detroit. Detroit, generally speaking, gives the Canadians issues. I'm not going to say, you know, that's a division rival. You're going to have problems against every division rival. But they give them issues. That game against Ottawa is very important because that turns the gap into 1 point. Mm-hmm. And then anything could happen from there. So that'll be.
I'm going to ask you if the game's in Ottawa or Montreal. It doesn't matter because it's a home game for the Habs in the other city.
Yeah, it's a home game for the Habs either way. But it seems like either way, Ottawa just deals with the Canadians just fine. They got no problems against the Canadians. Mm-hmm. What I will say though, outside of the Canadians, if we can, for the just the what little time we have left, is it just me or does no team in the Eastern Conference wildcard race want to make the playoffs? I mean, yeah. I don't know. This is a crazy playoff race, and it's intense because nobody's winning.
It really is. It really is. I mean, Washington's got a chance. I mean, Buffalo's actually got a chance to get back in it now. You know, this would be
what Detroit. 7 losses in a row, Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah, and then
you had it in the bag.
I mean, the Devils. Maybe does Jake Allen carry the Devils into a wild card spot? So they're 4 points out right now. And you're right. It's just is it pressure of the playoff stretch coming down? Is it guys getting tired at this point of the season? But that's where the loser point. You know, people complain about the loser point, but it does exactly what Gary Bettman and the NHL owners wanted it to do. Is it keeps more teams in the playoff hunt as long as possible? That's exactly what the loser point was brought in for.
You know what? You know what I will say about the loser point that one team can't be happy about the loser point, and I'm looking at it's Detroit, and it's Detroit because they're even on points. Granted, okay, it's maybe it's win percentage at that point or points percentage at that point, but they have more wins than the New York Islanders do. The New York Islanders have 14 overtime and shootout losses.
Yeah,
and they are if the season ended right now, they make the playoffs over the Detroit Red Wings at 29. Let's do some at 29 and 36. The Detroit Red Wings are 33 and 33. Yeah. That's a better record in my books.
Well, you know what's the Bruins have the most loser points in the league.
Huh.
They got
15. I didn't even look that far because I'm like, they're so stupid.
And they have 15 loser points, and Florida has 4. And they're one point apart in the standings.
Wow. Yeah. Listen, many people important in the industry, like as high as Pierre LeBrun and as low as Matt O'Han have been clamoring for the 3-point system.
Not going to happen.
I know it'll never happen, but
what'll happen before that is more teams getting into the playoffs and expanding the playoffs to 20 teams. Oh, that's more likely to happen than the points. It's all about money. It's all about money for the owners. The more teams in the playoff hunt, the more tickets, the more teams in the playoffs, the more money comes in. And from a player's standpoint, the more hockey-related revenue, the more money they make too. So pro sports. I keep telling people it's a business. It's all about money.
I know it's all about money, but it annoys me. Mm-hmm. Listen, the NBA playoffs, there are few better products than the NBA playoffs. And I feel like it has that reputation probably because of how unentertaining and how boring the regular season could be. But the playoffs in the NBA, amazing. What pisses me off the most about the NBA, forget the players taking therapy games, forget therapy day, therapy games, is 10 teams in each conference. I count the play-in tournament as the playoffs. It is the playoffs. 10 teams 20 teams, two-thirds of the league make the playoffs.
Yeah.
That it's too much. 50% is too much.
Yeah, well, the NHL used to have 16 out of 21 teams or whatever it was back in the day making the playoffs too, which was ridiculous.
I think
it's perfect. Oh, man, for 32 team league and half the teams make the playoffs. And I've said that's this many times on the podcast where making the playoffs in the NHL is an accomplishment today. You need almost 100 points to get into the playoffs in this league, including loser points. Okay. But it's making the playoffs is an accomplishment in today's NHL with 32 teams and a salary cap and everything else. It's not easy to get in the playoffs.
Oh, man, it's just.
And I wouldn't want to see it made easier. Like, I wouldn't want to see.
Well, that's it. You want.
But I think it's going to happen. Listen, I think you're going to expand and we're going to have 36 teams and we're going to have like 20 teams in the playoffs.
You know, would I not mind a one-game sudden death? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind that. I feel like a lot of people wouldn't mind that. However, the NHL has across sports, first of all, congratulations. To my knowledge, they're the only professional sports, North American sports league that doesn't call themselves the world champions when they win. So that's great. The other thing is that they're known to be the hardest trophy in sports to win.
Without a doubt. Every second, there's no out of bounds in hockey. You can't avoid a hit. You know, this is after doing 82 game regular season games. It is, I mean, you just look at the players by the end of the playoffs. Remember when the Canes won in 1993, Kirk Muller looked like he had been on a hunger strike for a month. Like, he was skin and bone. There was nothing left. I remember the year the Leafs, it was the same year when the Leafs had that playoff run. And Doug Gilmore, I remember reading stories, like they were force-feeding him pasta, bowls of pasta, to try and keep his energy level up. You know, we see guys shaking hands, like black eye. I mean, it is, you know, I don't like when people use the term war in sports. It's a war. But the NHL playoffs are, in sporting reference, as a sport, it's a battle. It's every second night with travel and playing the same team, the same guys night after night. It's a battle. To me, I'll insist it's the toughest trophy to win in sports.
And a seven game series, credit to the NHL and the NBA in this. It takes out really the luck factor. Because, you know, that's a great factor. Well, it's a great factor in football. It's intriguing. There's controversy. You want people talking. And one-off games are great. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Every playoff is great. However, seven-game series, you know who the better team was.
It doesn't eliminate it. It minimizes. When you look at the year Tampa a couple of years ago when they had 120-odd points and then they got swept in the first round by Columbus, right? So that shouldn't happen in a seven-game series. But, as Mark Bergeron used to say, anything can happen in the playoffs. It doesn't happen that often. But I agree. I mean, a seven-game – if you're the much better team in a seven-game series and you lose, that's all on you. If it's a one-game like the NFL, an unlucky bounce or a fumble at the wrong time or, whatever, a kickoff return can decide your season in one game. But in a seven-game series, when Tampa lost – or when the Leafs lost to the Canadiens and were up 3-1, you can only blame yourselves. You choked. That's the only way. No matter how well the other team played, you should have beaten that team in a seven-game series.
Like, the ref could have, had a bad call in game five. Well, you had two other chances to put it away.
Quarter or, there's so much stuff in one game. That's what makes the NFL playoffs so great, though, right?
It's good for drama. But again, that's what makes the NHL playoffs tough. Don't water down the product. Don't do it. I know it's going to make you more money, but they will. You know, just let the New York Rangers and the Canadians and the Bruins and the Blackhawks, let them double their prices, their ticket prices. People are going to pay it anyways. People can complain about ticket prices all they want. They're going to pay it. So,
or beer prices. As I always say, who's crazy? The guy buying beer for $15 or the guy selling beer for $15?
Yeah, exactly. If
you can sell beer for $15, you're pretty smart. If you're willing to line up to buy it, I don't know how smart you are.
If you could sell beer for $15, you're a pretty good salesman, and you should try, you know, maybe expand outside of beer. Start selling other expensive things.
One of the questions I was asked is, how expensive would beer have to get at a sporting event for fans to stop buying it?
Like
how expensive? If they charge $30 a beer, would people still buy it? That's a question I ask myself sometimes. At what point, I remember being, I think it was in Tampa, and in Tampa they were selling, this is last season, they were selling, I think, a tall boy of Corona or whatever it was, or Bud Light. I think it was $22 US, if I'm not mistaken. I'm thinking, that's a lot of money for like a Bud Light or whatever. I'm thinking,
yeah,
like if they charge 25, would people still, and people are lined up, like at what price point do people go, nah, I'll go for a beer after the game somewhere else?
So I think it's tough because this is a big factor, actually. The beer at the Tampa game, the reason why it's a big factor is because when I went last year to a March Madness game, I think the beer price of one beer and the dollar was worse than what it is now. It was something, I want to say, between $18 and $22.
Yeah, that's sort of
However, it wasn't the tall boy you get at the Canadiens game. It was a 24-ounce beer.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking tall.
Two hands.
Yeah, exactly. And I was, that thing, unless you're, you're pounding them, that could last you the whole game. So, I won't really complain. Can't really complain. So if it's that size, okay. But I think it depends on the context. Like, $30 for a beer, if it's the Stanley Cup final, people are going to buy it.
Yeah.
People are going to buy it. But if it's, I wonder what the beer sales would be on a Wednesday night in against the Columbus Blue Jackets. The game started at 7:30 and they're charging $30 for a beer.
Last time I was going to a Blue Jays game in Toronto a couple of summers ago, and I was with three other guys, and I went to buy a round of beer, and then I realized you're not allowed to buy a round of beer in Toronto. You're only allowed to get
customer.
No, I went to, you can't buy, you can't be four guys at a game and buy four beers, go up and buy your round for four beers. They won't give you four beers.
That's so lame. Toronto just get
it. Yeah, I think if I remember right, the limit was you could buy, it was two, I think, if you were one person.
Toronto just makes it too easy. They make it way too easy. Anyways.
So I got to go back to my seats and get another guy to come with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, Stu. Thank you very much for joining me on this Friday evening, this Friday night. Enjoy your weekend.
Okay, you too.
That was Stu Cowan. I'm Matt O'Hayan. I'll catch you next week.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaVie.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.